We made this.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Pick a Disc. I'm your host Matt Latham, here to talk to a guest about an album that they want to talk about for whatever reason they want. Today's guest is Mark Adams from the Life's Milestones podcast, who's brought The Prodigy's Fat of the Land from 1997, an album I'm not too familiar with, but realise that I know a few of their songs because a lot of their famous ones are from it. It's an interesting conversation and we touch about the elements of genre and what genre the album is and the members of the band and their public persona, etc, 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 and all sorts of stuff. You just have to listen to find out what we talk about. If you like what you listen to, then, you know, do the usual. Follow us on the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, at Pick a Disc. There's a Facebook group. If you just search for Pick a Disc, you should be able to find it. If not, the link is in the show notes. And whenever anywhere offers you to review the podcast, lie and give us 5 stars. That's all I'm going to say, really. So let's talk to Mark.
From the sounds of it, you're West Midlands. You're from the West Midlands. That accent sounds familiar.
Wolverhampton originally.
Wolverhampton.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a Warsaw.
Yeah, I moved to Manchester in 1997, so I've lived here longer than I lived in Wolverhampton. But you can take the boy out of Wolverhampton, but apparently you can't take the Wolverhampton out of the boy.
You can't get rid of the accent, can you?
No.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm probably going to be stuck with the Yam accents, even though I'm in South Birmingham now. So, yeah. So, Mark Adams, welcome to Pick a Disc. Glad to be here. You've chosen album in what seems to be a current trend of picking albums from the 90s at the moment. And considering someone once about a couple of weeks ago said I always seem to focus on the early noughties, this mid-90s surge is like refreshing. So why don't you tell the audience the disc that you've picked?
I have picked The Fat of the Land by The Prodigy. And I can't wait. Because this is genuinely one of my favourite albums of all time.
The Prodigy are like an electronic dance music act from Braintree, Essex, formed by Liam Howlett in 1990. The band's lineup has included MC and vocalist Maxim and vocalist and dancer Keith Flint. So what have you picked? The Fat of the Land.
Well, I'm a man of a certain age, and frankly, I grew up in the 90s. I was a kid in the 80s. And a young adult in the 90s, and 1997 was the year where I hit 18, and so it reminds me of being a young man and maybe even being cool, but I probably wasn't cool.
So how did you discover The Prodigy then?
I grew up in the 90s, and it was much, much easier to get into a nightclub underage when I was 17. And, frankly, I did it. And me and my friends went to a pub. Well, we went to a lot of pubs, but we also went to a nightclub in Wolverhampton called the Dorchester. That's been closed for a very long time.
I've been to the reunion several times.
The Civic Hall.
Yeah, it was in the Civic. It was at the Civic Hall for ages. Then it moved to the Slade Rooms, and then somewhere else. And yeah, so like Dorch Night was usually a thing for my friends. So with the Dorch,
you're a bit younger than me, though, right?
I am. Yes. Yeah. I was 12 in 97.
Oh, so you're not that much. You're not that young.
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Anytime, man. Yeah. But the Prodigy just. It was Firestarter. Frankly, the track Firestarter was one of my favourite songs, and I'd always get up and dance when that was on in the Dorchester. And I remember a lot of my friends used to take poppers in the Dorchester, and Firestarter was the one song where I'd have a sniff.
Okay.
And I mean, at the time, poppers wasn't associated with the gay community. It was just associated with the dance community. And you just had this little bottle of stuff on the dance floor. And
idiots would sniff it, get a massive head rush, dance like a fool, and then get a headache the next day.
That's a new one for the podcast. I mean, like this first instance of poppers being...
I'd like to point out that poppers is not illegal. It's never been illegal, and I've never really done any illegal drugs, but I did take poppers.
Okay. Okay. So basically it was through Five Stars that you discovered the project. So it was just basically through the Dutch nightclub that you found them. But how did you get to this? So I'm assuming then The Fight of the Land was the first album that you owned by the Prodigy then?
Not at all. I heard Firestarter and I'd never heard anything more subversive. As someone who naturally is very well-behaved, lawful, whatever you want to say, something like the Prodigy appealed to me because they were so rebellious, so subversive, so anti-establishment and so fucking cool. And so I heard Firestarter and I'd never heard anything like it. I was very much a kind of an indie rock kid, and Firestarter was really the first crossovery electronic dance rock, whatever you want to call it, kind of music that I'd heard, and it blew my mind. So I immediately bought Experience and Jilted Generation once, not long after the Firestarter single was released, and I very, very rapidly fell in love with both of those albums. And it turned out I had heard a couple of their tracks before and liked them, but not known that they were the Prodigy. But I bought those two albums because I'd loved Firestarter so much.
Okay, so did you get them both at the same time, or did you get The Fat of the Land afterwards?
I got Experience and Jilted Generation through Britannia. Do you remember Britannia?
I remember the adverts, but I wasn't allowed to subscribe to them because it was like the ones where you got, if I was right, you signed up and paid a subscription fee and you got five albums a month or something. Or?
Yeah, that's about right. It was a con, but you got five free albums when you signed up, and I got those albums through Britannia, and then. They remain two of my very favorite albums of all time, and they had some incredible tracks on them, and it was Firestarter that made me love the Prodigy, but it was those two albums that made me realize that they were going to be one of my favorite bands for forever, you know.
So it wasn't the first album that you got listened to from them, but it was this one. So in terms of this album and the other album you got at the same time, would you rate this one higher?
Oh, yeah, this is a masterpiece.
Okay.
I think that this is a masterpiece where they showed nothing short of genius innovation, where they melded genres that traditionally people would dress differently, people wouldn't like the other genres, people would, you know, I'm a rocker, I'm a raver, and they meshed it together to make something that was frankly sublime. And there isn't a bum track on the entire album. I genuinely think it is, it's Liam Howlett's magnum opus, and it's, considering how great the Prodigy's back catalogue is, I still think that this is their very finest work.
Before we delve into the album a lot more closely, and my history of the Prodigy, I know of them. Firestarter was when it was released, it was number one for a while, for a couple of weeks, few weeks, I think. Like, it just made an impact, and the video, like, I always remember watching, like, Top of the Pops and the video show up, and, Keith Flint pretty much, like, Keith Flint just writhing around on TV, just kind of, there's Firestarter, Twisted Firestarter. And it was like nothing that you'd really seen before. Well, I've not seen before.
It's a fantastic video made on a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
And that's all down to Keith Flint being a lunatic, a wonderful, wonderful lunatic.
Then I think Breathe came out a bit later on, and which was then got to number one again, I think, and was also shown on Top of the Pops quite a lot. And I think a chart show on ITV. And I just remember it, and because it was just so impactful, that image. Like, everyone was like, it was like everywhere. People talk about it at school and stuff. And then after that, I don't think the Prodigy kind of hit that level of mainstream again, even though I think some later albums got to number one on the albums chart. I don't think, or at least as as I started secondary school and kind of started to not listen to, I did listen to the kind of like Radio 1 and stuff, but I never felt like they was in the mainstream, or if I did, I never realised it was the Prodigy. And
there was a 7-year gap between Fat of the Land and Always Outnumbered, Always Outgunned, and I'll never forget that, because other bands were releasing an album a year, and I was waiting 7 fucking years for my favourite band to release another album, and that felt like forever. I got into a band called Gomez, and they had 5 albums in the space where I was waiting for a new Prodigy album to drop, you know?
Yeah, but, and I'm going to drop this now, is that this isn't actually the first Prodigy album I've listened to all the way through. Because a friend of mine encouraged me to listen to The Day Is My Enemy.
Okay, yeah.
Which was, 2015. And I listened to it a few times, and it was okay, but I never actually really had the urge to go and re-listen to it again. Because, instrumental dance music isn't my thing. I always kind of had a soft spot when I was much younger. I think it was just before this, actually. It's a point I was going to make, is that I think I've always seen the, in speech marks, golden age of dance music to be like the early to mid 90s, where it was pretty much rave culture, and it was a lot more synthy. Yeah. But then again, my history of dance music was me listening to, listening to whatever was being played on Top of the Pops or the radio when dance music was bigger here, just trying to block grunge. So you had Dr. Alban who else was it? There was Adamansky, with all those early 90s tracks, Entrance 73.
Have you listened to Experience and Jilted Gen?
I haven't, no.
Well, Experience is very ravey, and Jilted Generation is something in between a very ravey album and The Fat of the Land. There's tracks on there like No Good Start, The Dance, which is very dancey, but heavy, heavy, almost heavy music, but without guitar. But then it's got Voodoo People on it, which completely relies on a guitar riff. So Jilted Generation was almost like a foreshadowing of what Fat of the Land was going to be. And again, you haven't even said whether you liked Fat of the Land yet, but if you liked Fat of the Land, Jilted Gen is a wonderful way of seeing how they progressed from a band who made rave music like Out of Space to a band that made dirty, dirty electronic rock crossover like Firestarter. And the progression of those three albums, you can see how the band matured.
Okay, so my history kind of dance music, even though there's an argument this isn't technically dance music, but it's in the same kind of DNA. When I started, used to go out, my clubbing experiences was a bit later when I was in my early 20s, and it'd always be particularly in the mid to late noughties where you'll go into certain clubs and the upstairs will be the poppy kind of mainstreamish ones with all where they'll play all the usual school disco type stuff. So you Mr. Brightside, and then then they'll throw in the Spice Girls Wannabe for some random film, and then occasionally the Only Fools and Horses theme tune would usually get played as well. Downstairs was kind of like the kind of, again, I don't know if you like the kind of music, if you like the kind of music, I've got no judgment to you, but I've always had a kind of fear that one day I'd end up in an Ibiza dance club. And which is a genuine fear of mine for some reason.
It's not something I'm particularly interested in, but occasionally I'll go to that kind of place.
You have that kind of heavy kind of synthy remixes that go on for 12 minutes with the same 4 kind of beats and same vocal riff and stuff. And to me, that's where kind of dance music mood just moves, and I just wasn't really into it. And Fat of the Land, I can put any stress on that, I really liked it. I realised it kind of seems to be in a part where it was kind of moulding itself into different genres and kind of evolving away from what the early to mid 90s dance music was by the time.
What is the Fat of the Land? Is it dance? Is it punk? Is it rock? Is it something brand new? Is it something that's still new? Is it hybrid? I like how it kind of transcends definition. I think that's perhaps one of the reasons why I like it.
I mean, because it, It has elements of rock in it, which is kind of like the kind of like very grungy kind of like guitars and everything. But then it kind of builds on like the grunge, like the grunge or the darker side of Britpop that just kind of like got killed the moment that Spice Girls turned up. and that's a theory I still maintain. But then it kind of like adds in one of the genres on the Wikipedia page puts down as big beat, which
I have no idea what a big beat is.
My understanding of it is, before I click on it to kind of cheat and read what it is, my understanding is that it's like a very high powered percussion. It's very high powered percussion and like a very high tempo mood, and I think it's like kind of like a subset of dance music, if I'm right.
You could definitely call it high tempo, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I'm just going to, okay, now I'm going to quickly read if I'm right. Big beat is an electronic music genre that uses heavy break beats and synthesizer generated loops and patterns common to acid house and techno. The term has been used by the British music industry to describe music by artists by The Prodigy, Chemical Brothers, Fatboy Slim, Crystal Method, Propeller Heads, Cutler Rock, Basement Jackson, Groove Armada.
So you've just named pretty much my playlist there with Basement Jacks and the Chemical Brothers, and the Crystal Method are fucking brilliant if you've never heard any of their stuff.
I only listened to like the one song, which I think it was Trip Like I Do, which I think had Trent Reznor on it, I think, because a friend made me listen to it because he's a massive Nine Inch Nails fan. Because I think
it's old. It's a good song, though.
Yeah, which is quite funny, because I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who I work with, who is kind of like into his dance, but into his more dubstep kind of dancing, because dubstep is a genre I really can't get to. It just sounds like someone's pressing stop and play on a tape at the same time.
I find it quite intimidating. I like the odd dubstep track if I haven't realised it's dubstep. I was a few years ago, like 20 years ago, it was the same with drum and bass. And I do particularly like some drum and bass stuff, but if I went to a drum and bass club, I felt intimidated and that I wasn't cool enough to be enjoying that music. And I think I get a similar thing from dubstep and rap, that these are genres that I'm not familiar with, so I'm intimidated by them. But there's, on the odd occasion, there's a track and I go, damn, that's good music, because I don't really define myself as, if I had to describe myself, it would be I'd be a rocker, but that doesn't feel fair and it doesn't feel right, you know.
Yeah, but
I just like music, man.
Yeah, but the guy I was speaking to, because I think, because him and a friend of his just released a kind of like EP of like dubstep music, and I said to him that I listened to it once and I'll probably want to listen to it again. So, and this is, and which is an invitation for someone to pick a dubstep album he's listened to on the
I'm thinking that I might have to pick. I'd got a gigantic list of music I'd love to talk to you about, but now I'm thinking that maybe I should talk to you about the Crystal Method in future. Oh. On my list was Radiohead, Therapy, The Levellers, and David Bowie. But now I'm thinking I need to talk to you about the Crystal Method as well.
Oh, okay. Getting sidetracked. The conversation led to kind of discussions, because I said to him, oh, I've been, someone's told me to listen to the Prodigy and stuff, and he goes, oh, okay. And we had a conversation about Prodigy and everything. I'm saying, like, but I don't know that many. But he goes, oh, you'll know so-and-so, because I've used it on like videos we've used for what we do at work. And he goes, oh, you'll know the song Stand Up, and listen to put it onto Spotify. And I'm like, oh yeah, it doesn't sound like anything on Fat of the Land, but it's quite jolly. It sounds almost like a Fatboy Slim song at times. And then we basically ended up going through a few different kind of like British-led music projects, and the conversation led to Chemical Brothers, Fatboy Slim, Basement Jacks, Groove Armada, and I find that quite interesting. That though, pretty much all the bands we talk, all the acts that we talked about, are on this Big Beat page. So,
well, there you go. Turns out I really like Big Beat. I learned something today.
Yeah. So, there's a nice genealogy, particularly some of those artists as well, as they, particularly in the like the late to mid noughties. I mean, some Basement Jacks and Chemical Brothers. Well, I say some. The singles I quite like. I think it's Groove Armada that did Song for Muchia, with Muchia from the Sugar Babes, and that's a song I absolutely love. There's like a very interesting kind of like two note solo riff, like synth solo that goes through, which key changes and stuff. And So that's kind of like the genealogy music. It's not a genre that I really delve into. If anything, it's more of a surface level stuff that surface level singles based thing I've dipped into and out. But so I think that mean kind of like me looking in, like kind of liking those singles from some of those acts, kind of led me to really like the Prodigy, because I'm quite very much an indie guy, and got elements of rock in there as well. So it did leave it to it. So you got that kind of sound and attitude of your rock and your kind of like swagger of indie, but then you're propelled underneath with the elements and the tempo of kind of dance, and you've got the experimental, essence of electronica. Because if I was trying to think of a my spreadsheet to kind of class this with the genre, I ended up putting electronica, which I think is kind of like a overall term for a blend of kind of those stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's a term that never really has a concrete definition. So maybe you should change that to big beat, apparently.
Yeah.
And this is the thing about me and music, right, is I like what I like when I like it. So one day I might like some rap, despite the fact I define myself as a rocker. But the next day I'll definitely be going back and listening to some Rammstein. So I'm not a massive fan of pigeonholing things when it comes to music. I just like what I like when I like it, you know?
Yeah, but I think, because when you picked this album, I'm like, okay, it's the one with Breathe, it's the one with Firestarter and Smack My Bitch Up, which the only reason I know that is because the censored video used to be shown up on Q quite a lot of times when I was really into, like, just basically flicking through the music channels on Sky when I was younger. But I was quite surprised how much I really got into it, because it's not an instrumental album. Sometimes it is, but there's like lots of it's like a lot of songs on there as well, and it has enough to mix things up. It doesn't get boring. So, so I really did like it. I really enjoyed liking it. And it's kind of one of those things I'm quite surprised I never listened to it before. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
So if we start talking about like some of the songs in the album, and the album stuff, so like when you first think of the album, what songs jump out to you? So like when you go and play this, you press play and you think, oh, I can't wait to get to whatever.
I mean, the obvious one is Firestarter, but I never skip to it. And this is something I've always noticed about at least the music I like, that track 7 is always a banger. And Firestarter is track 7 on this album. Let me just check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is it track 8? Oh, bloody hell. Well, that's completely disproved my theory. Shit. But the point I'm making is I don't skip to Firestarter, despite the fact it was the song that got me into the Prodigy. And it starts with Smack My Bitch Up, which is just, it's so aggressively, look at us, this is what we're doing, we're doing something new, that the album just strikes you as, here we go. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And Smack My Bitch Up has had a lot of bad press for good reason. You know, it wasn't a very subtle video, and I'm sure at the time it was considered clever that the person smacking their bitch up was a lesbian. And that may have even been vaguely something progressive at that point. Not anymore. No, that it hasn't aged well as a concept. And the lyrics are problematic, but fucking hell, it's a great song.
Yeah, there's quite a lot about the actual video as well, because I wouldn't mind if you bring it up, because the video was, there's a lot of controversy with the video. Like,
oh, absolutely. Like,
in fact, I think PRS for Music in 2010, it was voted as the most controversial of all time. And
now, I didn't know that, but I can see why.
Yeah. I'll read through the synopsis for people who perhaps either have never heard of it or have not sure what I'm talking about. But director Jonas Ekelund's video for Smack My Bitch Up depicts a night out in London filmed from a first-person perspective, graphically portraying drinking and driving, snorting cocaine, violence, vomiting, vandalism, nudity and sex. The unedited version also includes a scene of heroin use, a hit-and-run accident, fights with men, abuse of women and a full sex scene. The protagonist takes a stripper, played by model Theresa May, not that one, home and has sex with her. As the stripper leaves with her things, oh God, I've got a bad image. The protagonist glances in the mirror, and the protagonist is revealed to be a woman and collapses on the bed. Liam Hewlett noted, "There's a realness to that video. Most people had nights out like that, off their head and coke and drink. It's not to everyone's taste, but not everything we do is. No radio station was going to play the song, so we thought we'd make a video that no one would play either."
And the Prodigy always courted controversy, even from the way Keith Flint looked to the way the song after this that no one remembers because it's never been on an album was Baby's Got a Temper. They released a single in between Fat of the Land and Always Outnumbered, Always Outgunned called Baby's Got a Temper. And that was about recreational rehypnol use. They always courted controversy, and it got people like me, Goody Two Shoes, the governor's son. They got me. I wanted to be that cool. I wanted to be a rebel, but I fucking wasn't. I got my A levels. I went to university, and I behaved Goody Two Shoes I was always meant to be. But bloody hell, I loved listening to stuff like The Prodigy with the idea of, wouldn't it be cool to be cool?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I get it. I'm not particularly proud of how cool I thought the video was, and fucking hell, it's a girl, and you know, look at the tits. Well, I was pretending to be straight at that point, and it's so 90s in its controversy that it's almost could be almost seen as satire now, because like, you know how like Brass Eye was a thing where they did episodes on paedophiles and episodes on getting making celebrities believe that cake was a new drug and getting them to discourage people from taking cake. And these are things that will not be released, will not be done in the modern world. And I think Prodigy is like that, at least Smack My Bitch Up, and indeed a lot of stuff off this album and around that time. Like I say, Baby's Got a Temper. And I look on it fondly because it's so un-PC, and I didn't know better at the time, and I'm much more enlightened. No, I don't agree with the message of the song. No, I don't agree with the violence against women, the drug use, etc. in the video. But fucking hell, it was cool when I was a nerdy little kid.
The video at the time, you can't believe how controversial it was. It was like banned from like everywhere. I think they only showed it like 1 a.m. on like MTV one,
that's
a few
right.
times and stuff.
That's
and,
right.
Like stuff that on this and stuff you'll see in the video is available on like Drama and Netflix within seconds.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
And that's the thing. The message hasn't aged well. The content isn't really controversial anymore. It's something you'd see in, like you say, anything that Narcos or Game of Thrones are very, yeah. very explicit and probably more explicit than this video was.
Moving on from that, what other songs from the album do you particularly hold in high regard?
Honestly, all of them. Genuinely, I very, very rarely, at least now, very rarely, very, very rarely will skip a track. And there was only ever one track that I would skip when I was younger. That was Diesel Power. But the only reason I skipped Diesel Power was because it was between Breathe and Funky Shit, which Breathe was their second single and Funky Shit's my favourite track on the album. And I'm impatient. So it's not that Diesel Power's a bad track. It's not. But I reckon I've probably listened to it maybe 30% less than everything else on the album. But I will just press play on this album, which is so rare in this modern day and age, I think. And I still do it with this Trouble Gun by Therapy, Leveling of the Land by The Levelers. These are albums that I wanted to discuss with you, but I deliberately picked the ones where I will just press play rather than choose and skip tracks. And this one I just felt was the one that really is the one that had the highest impact on my life, but not by that much.
No, say Diesel Power had I think Cool Keith from the Ultramagnetic MCs doing rap vocals for it as well.
And, that's right.
Apparently, Cool Keith was paid $40,000 for his appearance on the album.
That sounds like a lot of money for 1997.
Yeah, I mean, like, which is ridiculous. I want to bring up because I really liked it back in the day, and I still like it now. Is Breathe, which was another number one. And if I'm completely honest, I think I like it more than Firestarter. I think I've always liked it more than Firestarter, mainly because I was always one of those who always goes for the underdog, because everyone else would pick Firestarter, because that's the one I think had Maxim in it a lot more in the chorus,
right.
I think, yeah. And then before Keith Lynn did the "Play My Game" thing and stuff.
Yes,
but there's one thing I quite like it as well is that, particularly listening to it now, and as I've been doing the podcast, I've been paying more attention to the music, and this is an album where you kind of have to in places. Is that rediscovering just how interesting the different sounds in that song are. Like, because there's an acoustic guitar break for like about the 2.5 minute mark in, where he kind of like breaks with an acoustic guitar randomly. And it somehow makes a kind of like a riff with what seems to be like whip samples. Mm. Like whip samples, like, and
yeah,
turns it into,
right,
like, yeah. And
I think it's scratching, but it does sound like a whip. You're absolutely right.
I think it's the video that's given me that impression. I wonder why. But no, I really do like that one. And I just wanted to briefly mention it if it wasn't there. But it was number one in like a lot of places around the world as well.
I fell in love with the song Firestarter. And as a follow-up to Firestarter, I've always been quietly cynical in my own head. I was like, they can't do a song as good as Firestarter ever again. And I do feel like, as a follow-up to Firestarter, you wouldn't have believed that Firestarter could have been matched, certainly at the time. And Breathe did manage that. It's an incredible track. And I remember I went to a gig at the Wolverhampton Civic Hall just after Firestarter had been released. And they handed out to everybody, with no explanation, a picture of a fish on an orange background. Didn't tell you what it was. Turned out that it was the front cover of their next single.
Oh, okay.
Because the front cover of Breathe was like an orange background with a fish on the front. And but they just handed out these flyers with the word Breathe on it and didn't say Prodigy. It was just a fucking fish and the word Breathe. And then a few weeks later, we found out what it meant.
Oh, right. Wow. Actually, looking on the Wikipedia page, it's a whiplashing sword sound effect is a sample from the song The Mystery of the Chess Boxing by the Wu-Tang Clan.
Well, there you go. I thought it was scratching.
Oh, and I thought it was a whip. But apparently it's a whiplashing sword. Well,
good grief.
Firestarter itself is, again, like, it was like low. It was everywhere. And it's probably, arguably still the song they'll know known for today. I mean, I think Keith
Flint. I think so.
Yeah, Keith Flint was probably always referred to as the Firestarter, no matter where he went.
Mm. But this album was the first time he'd sung. He was a dancer for the band alongside Leroy, who left them after Fat of the Land. But there was Leroy and Keith who just danced. They were just dancers during Experience and Jilted Jen. And it was the majority of the work was done by Liam.
Okay.
And Maxim did some vocals, but Keith, his debut was Firestarter as a vocalist. Prior to that, he was a guy with long hair and a hat that danced. And then he got a new look. He started going, yeah. And he was fucking superb.
All right. Okay. Yeah. And whilst not wanting to delve too much into Keith Flint and regrettably what happened, but there's a lot of good stuff that was like revealed about him, and one of the stories that, and I think this probably shows the kind of person he was that after he sadly committed suicide, was that James Blunt said that I think when he went to the Brit Awards in wherever, like the Gallagher brothers like basically sued him. I think Damon Albarn threatened to not be in the same building as James Blunt, but Keith Flint walked over to James Blunt, put his arm around him and goes, you know what, mate, well done for having the best selling album of the year. And James Blunt says, you know what, he's never forgotten that.
Yeah.
And I quite like that story. And I quite like that story, actually, because I think that, and like Keith Flint was also very into his like running and park runs and all that kind of stuff. And
a mate of mine lives in Birmingham, and he vaguely knew Keith. They went on the same runs. They weren't friends or anything, but he just knew him as a guy that he ran alongside. And that's kind of cool. You've got to remember that people are just people. Famous people go for runs. Famous people have a burger. Famous people like board games, whatever. And I think Keith looked like that, but behaved like a real human. You don't see any bad press before, even way before he took his own life. You never saw any bad press about Keith, despite the fact of the way his appearance was. And that's important to me. I'm a skinhead with tattoos, but I am one of the, I'm not what you might stereotype someone with no hair and tattoos to be. I like to consider myself a gentle humanitarian, a humanist, a good person who part of my humanism is that I dedicate a lot of my spare time to trying to make the world a better place. And I think Keith was the epitome of look the way some people think, but behave the way you feel you should be. And that's very important to me. He's an incredible role model, and people have mental health problems. Yeah. People suffer in silence. People go as far as Keith went, and it's a very, very sad story. And I was as devastated by Keith's death as I was David Bowie, Leonard Cohen, and other musical artists that matter to me. I don't tend to get emotional about that kind of thing. I didn't know these people, but Keith Flint, it got me, man. And yeah. I hadn't really felt that way since David Bowie.
Yeah, I'll go on to it a bit longer, but I think, as you said, it's always something where, again, I think going for this, like trying to subvert the stereotype, as did with like perhaps the video to smack my bitch up, but where you kind of think of one thing when you look at it. Keith Flint, you pretty much had the kind of like 70s punk, like Hellraiser, like hoodlum look of him. But then basically, as you said, like all the stories around him, he was the complete opposite of what you would think if you saw someone looking like Keith Flint walking down the street. It's,
you've all had a mate like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. And again, I think that epitomizes the music of this album as well, where sometimes I probably just write the Prodigy off as a dance, like a dance act or a dance like project of someone, but it, there's the argument that it's not dance music. He's just got elements of it.
I was going to say, I think the reality is that when you've got a guy like Liam Howlett, who is a genius when it comes to decks and mixing and making music through electronic mixing and electronic sampling and all that, that it is a dance album, or at least it should be. But it's so much more than that, particularly like I said, when the Fat of the Land, when they added more vocals from Maxim and added more and new vocals from Keith. And in their live shows, they added a guitarist called Giz Butt, who did the live. You remember you talked about the acoustic moment in Breathe. He did that live, whereas obviously the album had been made by samples by Liam Howlett mixing. They are just something very special because they transcend everything that they're inspired by.
Yeah, and I say I think Keith Flint was probably like the ideal kind of like visual role model, because I think it took him three albums, but I think then the visual identity of the Prodigy became Keith Flint. And I think absolutely, he became, yeah, so even though it was Liam Howlett's kind of thing, Liam Howlett walked past me, punched me in the face and started like screaming at me in the street, I wouldn't know it was Liam Howlett. I've got no idea what he looks like.
I would, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. Whereas like Keith Flint, he's kind of one of those people that I think even if it's like a 20 odd year old, song, people probably still see Keith Flint and immediately know who he was and who the Prodigy are. You just see a picture of him and you know it's the Prodigy. I think at a stretch, I wouldn't know Maxim if I saw him, but Keith Flint, I think he's kind of part of the digital DNA of British music culture.
I think so. You're right. I think the image of Keith Flint is as striking and as permanently etched in people's memories as, say, the image of Kiss with the makeup.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of Kiss, apparently Firestarter was covered by Gene Simmons.
I can believe that.
In 2004. And also, I think Weird Al Yankovic created a loose parody of Firestarter called Lazy Haircut for an episode of The Weird Al Show. But he didn't do a full parody because CBS didn't want to pay royalties. So, Firestarter is one of those songs. Again, if people listen to this and they've never heard Firestarter because of some reason, either because they're too young or perhaps didn't, or perhaps are not well known in the country they're listening to, fully check out Firestarter. It's brilliant.
Check out the whole album. It's fucking superb.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But Firestarter isn't my favorite track on the album, though. I did say that it was funky shit, and I think part of the reason for that is, like, at 17, 18, I'd never seen a song title with the word shit in it. So I skipped to that, and it's just down and dirty. And I'm going to say this word, even though I don't think it has any definition. It's down and dirty electronica. It's nasty. And it's cool. And it's just a great track. I don't even have any justification for it. It's just a great track and I love it. I look at the track list and they're all great tracks.
Yeah. I say Funk Sheets, it's one of these that's got like about several different years of different samples in it. I think it samples the Beastie Boys to the point where I think the Beastie Boys have got a writing credit on it.
Yeah.
I did quite like Minefields as well. And I remember listening to it and I was trying to figure out where the hell I heard it before. And apparently it was actually in The Matrix.
Yeah, and that made it very, very cool. The scene in The Matrix, it was basically him and his group walking through a nightclub, and it's just so cool. The Matrix is dated now, but even now you look at it and the images, the coats and the sunglasses and even the outdated mobile phones, fundamentally cool. Mm-hmm. And the Prodigy are associated with that forever.
Yeah, very, very much so. Also, I quickly want to mention the final song, Fuel My Fire, which I think is a cover.
By a band called L7, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the original ever, but what I did quite like is that apparently it features Saffron from Republica, which is like, and everyone's got
Love Republica.
Yeah, I've got, the only thing I've listened to is like a Greatest Hits album, but I was like, oh yeah, this is Saffron. And like, pretty much like, you can, and I don't think she's in it until like about halfway through, but then she's just like, there's a lot of vocal effects on her voice and stuff, but she's like screaming and shouting like with an energy that a different kind of energy that you find in like,
and I think for me the importance of this song is how it consolidates the transition to the lead for Keith Flint.
Yes,
it's perfect for him. The song is almost like it was written for him, and despite the fact that it wasn't, the L7 version is great, and it is good old dirty punk with a female singer, but I just feel like this song was made for Keith.
Do you think that the project improved after they've pretty much had Keith as a vocalist, not as like just the visual stuff as you mentioned earlier, but do you think the vocal, like him doing the vocals, kind of gave him a better identity, or do future albums kind of still take the risk like this one where he's not in every song? Or
the next album didn't have Keith on vocals at all.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. That answers the question. We'll talk about that a bit later on in the
But I do feel like the Prodigy, if Keith had killed himself before the Fat of the Land, the Prodigy would have been seen as a very, very different band, and it would have forever just been Liam Howlett and his dancers. This album made them iconic.
Oh, okay. Okay. Let's briefly move on to a bit of the reception of it, because it's been well received. Probably critically, probably seen as their best album.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. It's been featured in a number of publication lists. So I'm reading this from the Wikipedia article, but in 1998, Q Magazine readers voted Fat of the Land the ninth greatest album of all time in 98. So like, nice. The ninth album, greatest album of all time. It's also been ranked 43 in Q's Best 50 Albums of Q's Lifetime. It was included in their 90s Best Album of the 90s and 50 Best Albums of 1997 lists. Rolling Stone included it in their Essential Recordings of the 90s. Spin ranked it 20 on the Top 20 Albums of the Year 1997. Melody Maker ranked it 13 on the list of Albums of the Year for 97 and 29 in the 97 Paz and Jop Critics Poll. And in the critics poll for the NME, it ranked in as number 17 in their 1997 poll.
It's... I'm surprised it wasn't higher for 1997 as a specific year. But this is all a huge number of awards for an incredible album. So, you know.
And I think you've already referenced it before. It's the question I ask if you've seen them live. And I'm assuming that's a yes, because you've mentioned
five
it twice.
Times. Not as many times as I'd have liked, but five times, yeah.
At what points did you see them? Is it quite a wide...
So I saw them at the Civic Hall in about 96, I want to say. I don't remember. It was before they released Breathe, and indeed I know that Fat of the Land was released in 1997. I saw them at Glastonbury 1997, where they headlined, and it was like nothing else. It's probably still top five my favorite gigs of all time. The attitude, they smashed four or five mics. The sound went off. The sound went to shit. So they had to go off stage. They came back on and like, that's not gonna fucking stop us. And then it did again. And then they got the crowd back the third time, and it was a hell of a gig. But they smashed like four or five microphones. They were just red hot, and they played songs that we did not know, because they hadn't released Fat of the Land. Fat of the Land was being released the Monday after that Glastonbury. But even then, that was the first time I heard Funky Shit, and I knew that these songs were going to be with me for forever. It was an incredible gig at Glastonbury. I saw them again at Reading the following year. I've seen them at the Manchester Arena and the Manchester Academy.
Okay, and I'm assuming great all the way, all every time.
Yeah, I remember the Manchester Arena. It was the MEN Arena at the time, but the Manchester Arena gig being odd. I had a seat to see the Prodigy, and that just felt a bit weird. So it was still awesome, but it just felt a bit weird.
When was that?
It's got to be about 10 or 12 years ago. It's not recently.
Okay, so it was probably a bunch of people who were trying to rave but couldn't because they've sat down.
We just got up, but there was more space between the dancing loonies than you normally would have at a gig for the Prodigy, and it was still a great gig, but it was odd.
I think we've touched upon this as well, but if there's any other albums in the discography that you'd recommend people to listen to...
All of them.
Okay.
Every single one of them. I think the previous two, Experience and Jilted Generation, are fascinating as almost like a music historian, where you see how they started as a rave band, transgressed through to something akin to what Fat of the Land was going to be with Jilted Generation, hit their peak at Fat of the Land, but then stayed relevant for another 22 years. Always Outnumbered was one of the most anticipated albums of its time, because we'd waited 7 years for that motherfucker. And Invaders Must Die was a return to form, and The Day Is My Enemy was great, and then Notorious, it was like, shit, they only took 3 years, that's not like them.
Okay. Okay, so pretty much any of them. So
I love them all. I think Jilted Generation is my second favourite, but I love them all. I did want to quickly talk about the Japanese release of Fat of the Land, because they added two tracks to that were released elsewhere in Britain.
Oh, okay.
They had No Man Army, which had Tom Morello in it from Rage Against the Machine. That was released on the Spawn soundtrack in the US and Britain. And they also added Molotov Bitch, which is a great song. And we had to wait until their greatest hits album in the mid-thousands, called Their Law, before we actually got a release of Molotov Bitch. So for the longest time, it was like a B-side on a single and available on the Japanese version of Fat of the Land, but it wasn't on an album until years and years later. And it's a great track.
Oh, okay. Okay. I didn't listen to the Japanese version.
Neither did I. You can't get it on Spotify.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to know why I listened to this on Spotify and not my own album?
How come?
Because I don't have any of my albums anymore. About a year ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, I got rid of all the cases and put them in these sleeve books. And I stored them in my car because literally the only CD player I had was in my car. I then had a horror crash on the motorway where I really should not have walked away. So I'm incredibly fortunate in that effect. But I lost every single CD I've ever owned when I crashed that car.
Oh, bloody hell.
So I don't have CDs anymore. I literally have nothing but an electronic library. Wow. I lost a lot of good music that day.
Wow.
But I didn't lose me, so I'm all right, you know?
Yeah. Priorities, of course, yeah. Else you wouldn't be here speaking to me, so...
Exactly. I wouldn't be able to gush about how amazing this album is.
Yeah, and talking about gushing about amazing something is, it's time for the Playlist Hall of Fame nomination. So for those who are listening for the first time, this is where the guest picks a song from the album to be immortalised forever in a Spotify Hall of Fame playlist that I've got, which will be linked in the show notes. I've got no... I can't veto or overrule anything that Mark will pick or what the guests pick. So, Mark, which song are you going to pick for the playlist to be immortalised forever and why?
The obvious choice is Firestarter, but I'm not going for that. I think that would be too obvious. I think I want a track that emphasises just how good this album was that isn't as well known, but I believe when people listen to it, they'll go, damn, that's a good track. So I'm not going for any of the three singles. And as much as I like all of the tracks on the album, it was a toss-up between Fuel My Fire or Funky Shit, because again, Minefields is on the Matrix soundtrack and Serial Thriller's been on lots of things, and frankly Narayan is probably the weakest track on the album. So it was definitely between Fuel My Fire and Funky Shit, and just because I love it, it's close, but I'm gonna ask you to put Funky Shit as the track on the album.
Okay, no worries. So I'm writing that down. Funky Shit is your pick for the playlist. So, and with that, Mark, that's it. We've spent an hour talking about The Prodigy and it's been great.
Can I just tell you one last little story about The Prodigy and Glastonbury?
Yes, definitely. Go ahead.
Glastonbury 1997, like I say, I saw the band when they... where they just absolutely smashed it despite the rain getting into the speakers and causing sound problems. And they were just out of this world. And I knew that the Fat of the Land was being released the following Monday after that Glastonbury. And I'd, you know, I was 18-year-old lad, not much money really. I got a budget for Glastonbury, and then I basically had no money until forever after that, you know. And I rationed all my money to save 12 quid for the Fat of the Land when I got back from Glastonbury. I had had no shower in 5 days. I had been rained on. I was covered in mud. I'd had the coach trip from hell on the way home. And I was utterly bedraggled, having had the best time of my life, but really, really needed to sleep. I was damned if I wasn't going to get off that bloody coach with my horrible backpack, smelling like goodness knows what, and going straight to Wolverhampton HMV in the Manda Centre to go and get myself a copy of The Fat of the Land with my last 12 quid in all of the world. And it's one of the best decisions I made in my entire life.
Awesome. With that, we're at the end. And Mark, thank you ever so much for coming on the podcast and talking about The Prodigy and kind of like filling in the gap of the album that I've never listened to. But
Mad that you've never listened to that album.
It's not. I mean, no, it is mad, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying my own thing. So
Do you think you'd listen to it again now that we've done the podcast? Will it be something you'll go back to?
Probably not all the way through. Perhaps the odd tracks. Probably the odd track I'll probably dip in into. I'm probably listening to Breathe because I've forgotten how much I really like Breathe. Again, I really like Minefield actually, that we didn't speak about. But I'll probably listen to bits of it. Probably not all of it, but definitely quite a few tracks on there I would like to re-listen to.
Good. I'm glad.
If people want to find you and follow your work, where can they find you?
Well, my general Twitter handle is Mark Adams HC. I also do the Twitter for my podcast, Pull or Pass, which is a weekly comic book radio show. And I'm about to launch a new podcast called Life's Milestones. That's at Life's Milestones. And that is to do with my day job. I'm a humanist celebrant and I perform non-religious weddings and funerals. And so I've started a podcast on the We Made This podcast network alongside you, which is about birth and naming ceremonies, relationships and weddings, and death and funerals. And I ask the same kind of flow of questions to a different guest every fortnight. So that will have been launched by the time this episode airs. So the first couple of episodes should be ready for you to have a listen to, if that's your kind of thing. And I've really enjoyed doing that. And I'm really glad that I joined the We Made This podcast network, because it feels nice to be in a place with other creative folk, you know?
Yeah, and there's a nice like community of like creators that try and help each other and kind of like, or take the mickey out of each other if need be as well.
Well, quite.
Yes. So yeah, so feel free to listen. Do check out Life's Milestones. It's again, if it's quite different to pop culture stuff that you'll usually find on We Made This, but yeah, definitely check it out.
And other than that, if you want me to be your celebrant for your wedding or your funeral or your naming ceremony, well, I'm being trained in naming ceremonies soon. Have a look at my website. It's humanist.org.uk/Mark Adams.
Okay. And with that, it's time for us to say goodbye. So again, Mark, thank you ever so much for appearing on Pick a Disc, and I hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Pick a Disc, and I've been your host, Matthew Layman. Our theme music is Pump by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Pick a Disc is hosted by the We Made This podcast network, and you can find them on www.spreaker.com/user/WeMadeThis. You can find the Pick a Disc show site on www.spreaker.com/show/PickADisc. You can find us on all the usual social media type places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter under Pick a Disc. You can also email us on pickadisc@gmail.com. Until next time, happy listening to all those discs that you are picking. Goodbye.
Previously on the We Made This Network. Cinemortuary.
Bad acting all round. Yes. It's probably something that's going to happen over and over again in this film. I think the next scene is where we're introduced to dickhead older lads, is that right?
No, we've just got a quick bit with Dad as well.
Oh, God, do we have to? Go on, then. Dad's fucking useless as well.
Yeah. We Buy Records.
One of our listeners, they were walking past a charity shop where they saw someone had left records. And not just a few records, six bags of records.
Oh, shit.
So they eyeballed these records and thought, it's a bank holiday. It's Sunday today.
So let me guess, they thought it would be only right for me to prevent them getting nicked by somebody by me nicking them.
Correct.
Observing the Pattern, a Fringe podcast.
No, I was just going to say that, like, I can't remember how people thought about it when the series first started, but I really like Anator, and I think she gets better and better as the series goes on. And, like, I felt like here, I thought you got to see a few different sides of Olivia, so that's what I liked, especially about this, like, first sequence, you know.
Yeah, so I mentioned this to Tony in the primer. She's one of my favourite characters, or she is my favourite character, I think, in Fringe, and mainly because when you first see her, you don't know necessarily that she's the main star.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.